This is Florida Matters. I'm Matthew Petty. People know Titus O'Neil as a star of WWE. But before he was a pro wrestler, Titus was Thaddeus Bullard, a promising young football player at the University of Florida who went on to play in the Arena Football League. Bullard's path to athletic fame and fortune wasn't easy. He writes about his upbringing to a single mother who struggled to make ends meet in his book, There's No Such Thing as a Bad Kid. The Tampa resident has built a reputation as someone who gives back to his community. Over the last decade, he's given out more than 15,000 gifts every year to underprivileged kids through his Joy of Giving event. And in partnership with Hillsborough County Public Schools, he's worked to transform Sly Middle Magnet School into an educational innovation hub. And this month, he received the University of South Florida's Kente Community Award. The Kente Awards celebrate the achievements of Tampa Bay area community leaders and USF alumni. Thaddeus, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, I want to talk about wrestling for a little bit. And the highlight of your pro wrestling career, I think, came in 2015 when you and Darren Young, the primetime players, won the tag team championship. Let's just listen to a little of that.
Titus and Darren are the new tag team champions.
What a huge upset over New Day.
How do you figure that's an upset?
Well, because New Day is so positive. They're on a roll.
Well, they positively lost tonight. Hey, Titus O'Neil just started slinging people.
Maybe we learned tonight the New Day needs three of them to actually retain the titles. Remember, Kobe wasn't out here.
So, sure, you know, winners and losers in WWE are predetermined, and we'll get into that later, but are you still active in wrestling? Are your fans going to see you in the ring anytime soon?
I don't know if they'll see me in a ring anytime soon. I'm the global ambassador for the company, so I've been doing a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, a lot of stuff working with our community teams as well. And I'm, you know, looking at getting into acting and transferring into some film stuff too, so I don't know if I'll be trying to bump around too much more in risk of injury and losing projects, stuff like that. But very much so proud to be a WWE Hall of Famer. Very much so proud to have been the first and only WWE Global Ambassador. And having the opportunity to represent our company in so many ways, especially on this platform, billions of views and social media followers, etc., has obviously given me an opportunity to travel the globe and do some amazing things with so many people from around the globe. And I'm just continuing to build at home, you know, what's been built here in the city, in the Tampa Bay area that I love and that I will always continue to live regardless of how big of a superstar I've become in movies and film and television. Simply because Tampa Bay is a very special place to me for so many reasons.
So what do you do as a global ambassador? What does your kind of daily routine look like?
So we obviously do a lot of things built around our premium live events, formerly called pay-per-views. And in 2020, when we had WrestleMania here, I hosted WrestleMania alongside Hulk Hogan. And one of the things that I wanted to do is we do so much for so many different people, but we don't really have that lasting legacy moment. And so one of the things I wanted to do is start a community champion showcase where we go and we highlighted different organizations that were nonprofits, those that don't normally get the big dollars, but they're doing tremendous work, and see how we can lend credence to and credibility to some of the work they're doing, utilizing our platform, but also giving financial donations. So since then, we've given out almost, I want to say, $750,000 throughout the all of our premium live events around the country and in the globe. We usually highlight 3 to 5 community champions that are doing things, whether it's built around food insecurity or housing or working with underserved kids, teachers, education, etc. So it varies depending on the town, but really being active and trying to help superstars and the company make sure that we're leaving a lasting legacy.
And food insecurity and education are close to your heart, and that's part of who you were and sort of the experiences that shaped you. We'll talk a bit about that later, but let's just kind of rewind to when you were growing up and you would watch wrestling with your family, right? Your mother and your grandmother. Now, there's a passage in your book where you describe a match in which your hero, Junkyard Dog, who's black, was wrestling in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and getting cheered by a predominantly white crowd. Let me just read this. They looked at Junkyard Dog as the gifted performer he was and said, "That guy's our dude. We don't want anyone to mess with him. He was truly a unifying presence. It was through him that I realized that America can be the great place we want it to be. It was beautiful. Can you talk more about what it is you love about pro wrestling and sort of what drew you to it in the first place?
Just the storytelling and the character building and being able to control how a person feels and understanding how to translate that into real life situation. You know, the art of, if I'm a good guy, people want to see me win. They want to see me come out on top. If I'm a bad guy, they want to see me get beat. Mm-hmm. And depending on what type of bad guy you are, you're going to talk outrageous and brag about what you have and talk down to people and pick on people and things like that. And nobody likes a bully, right? I hated bullies growing up. I still hate bullies to this day. And so you're playing this character. You get a chance to get people engaged from all walks of life. You know, we don't go into an arena and say, oh, well, how many white people are there? How many black people are there? It's just whoever comes, comes. You know, it's a product for everybody. Mm-hmm. And be able to leave, make the people leave home happy, you know, and that's night in and night out, wherever we are. And the great thing I can say about my career with, and travels with WWE is that I truly grew an understanding of, like, even the country that we live in, you know, and as you illustrate through the story that I highlighted in the book with Junkyard Dog, black and white, and you go to different places and, you know, we like to promote ourselves as the greatest country in the world, yet we have veterans that have fought for this country that are homeless, like literally right around the corner from here. And, you know, we lead the world in mass shootings. I like to tell people that through my travels, and there's nowhere in this world I haven't been, love is a universal language. And when we learn to speak it, regardless of the dialect, there's a higher chance for us to increase humanity and mm-hmm. what humanity should stand for and be about. It shouldn't be about political affiliation. It shouldn't be about religious beliefs. It should truly be about one human caring for another human and respecting another human.
WWE, too, I mean, it's kind of, for people who don't really follow it, it's a little strange, I think, and it's uniquely American, but it does have this global appeal. Like,
yes.
I grew up in the 80s and 90s in New Zealand, and my friends were obsessed with wrestling. It was called WWF, I think, back at that stage. But there's something about it that I think kind of, as you say, people can connect with those stories. So I wanted to play another little bit of sound. You sort of write about the blend of athleticism and scripted drama or kayfabe in pro wrestling. But sometimes things go off script. Here's a clip from your entry into the Greatest Royal Rumble in 2018.
I can't believe what I just saw. Did that really happen?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Did that happen?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. Yeah.
Trying to slide into the ring.
Let's just move on and forget about it.
I can't believe this.
Okay, no.
Oh, my God. Here's the replay. Titus O'Neil trying to get into the ring. And Titus O'Neil tripped and went headfirst through the apron underneath the ring. And Titus is ticked off now.
I just might want to check.
Talk about that moment. How fans reacted to it. Like, what was that like for you?
They were shocked. Not shocked. I feel like everybody feels like it was part of the show, which is great, you know, because we're the only ones that know what's going to happen. We know who's going to win, who's going to lose, who comes in at certain times, you know. And so when it happened, my first thought was, oh, crap, you know, well, then the show must go on. You know, stuff happens all the time on live TV every week. But being a professional, you have to keep going, keep moving. If you see a performer on stage singing their song and the audio goes out, you know, they keep the people engaged, you know, and they keep going through it. That's just a sign of a true showman. Mm-hmm. And made a lot of money from the biggest fall I've ever had in my life is on the biggest stage. And so as funny as it is to a lot of people, I literally could have lost my life there that night too, because the LED board wasn't up and there usually are bars and tables and ladders and chairs and et cetera underneath. Mm-hmm. And thank God that wasn't the case. And everybody checked on me when I walked back to the back and say, hey, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine. Then everybody just started laughing, and I was laughing along with them. And I looked over at Vince, and I said, I get a T-shirt out of this, right? And he's like, yeah, so that's, you know, that's extra money that I wasn't expecting to have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, in entertainment, you want to have moments, whether they're funny, whether they're dramatic or whatever. You know, everyone remembers their favorite scene from a movie. Everyone remembers their favorite character, you know, in certain plays and things like that. For me, that is one of several moments that I had in WWE that I can honestly say, fall down, get back up, and you show people how to gracefully go through life, because millions of people have seen this and continue to see it. And I'm fine with that, because every time they click on that link, that college tuition or that high school tuition that I had to pay continues to be paid for. So I get the last laugh at the end of the day.
How did you come up with the name Titus O'Neal?
Well, Shaquille O'Neal was one of my favorite athletes, not just because of basketball, because like Shaq did music, he did movies, he did everything. And I was like, I want to be the Shaquille O'Neal of the WWE. And then my youngest son's name is Titus. And so it's probably a handful of people that actually use their real name because they want to own the IP and things like that too. And so my original spelling was O-N-E-A-L. And someone wanted to make me Irish, so they turned it O-N-E-I-L. Just fine. It's all good. And but the main thing was that I was Titus O'Neal, and it was a name that I picked.
Do you have, like, did they offer you some options? Like, say, you can be a villain if you want, or do they say, we want this kind of character? Like, how do you come up with the character that you play?
It depends. It depends on a lot of things. Sometimes they want to start you off a certain way, and if it's not working, they'll move you a different direction. Some people can do both. I've done both and done them effectively. And really, the best bad guys end up being the best good guys. Like, I can make people hate me, hate me, hate me, and I do one good thing, and then all of a sudden they love me. Oh, he's not that bad. And it's the same way in entertainment across the board. You know, if you look at certain movies, you know, there's a person that, you know, has shown to be like just this villain, you know, all throughout the movie. And then they have one glimmer of human sense, and then it's like, oh, maybe it's not that bad. And then they turn it again, you know, and then at the end of the movie, they end up turning it all the way around. And it's like, you know, people are on their feet because I wanted to root for him so bad. So if you're a good enough bad guy, I always look at it like this, like Dwayne The Rock Johnson was a bad guy. He was a good guy when he first came out. You know, they played on his heritage and everything, and it wasn't working because it was just, this guy's too big and whatever. And he played at Miami, you know, so he's just like, he's got this swagger about him, and he luckily had gotten injured around the time, so he had some time to kind of figure this out, and he just exploded, you know, one moment after another moment after another moment after another moment, and then gets catchphrase after catchphrase after catchphrase, and the next thing you know, you got a megastar.
Let's back up before your wrestling career and talk a little bit about football. Now, here's a description of the kinds of pickup games you were playing as a kid. This, again, is from your book, No Such Thing as a Bad Kid. Quote, "To have fun, all we needed was a football so we could play throw 'em up, blow 'em up. We played on concrete, but we hit each other like we were on mattresses, skin tore from our arms and legs, heads slammed against the pavement. When the ball was accidentally thrown into a tree and bounced from branch to branch, we pretended that we wanted to catch it, but in reality, we were each praying that it would fall into someone else's arms because we knew that whoever got it, got it." So it took a little while for you to find your feet as an athlete, though. When did things start to click for you there?
Well, I've always been involved in sports. I just wasn't very good at them. And a large part of that was because I was just this tall, lanky kid that, you know, 12 years old or 11 years old, you're 6'1", you wear a size 13, 14 shoe. You're just, you know, you're clumsy because your body's just not caught up to your size yet.
And you wore glasses too, right?
And I wore glasses, and I got bullied a lot because of those glasses. But as I got older and I understood sports a lot more, and honestly, it the anger that I had from being bullied and being poor and being told what I'll never be able to do, that actually helped me in sports more so than anything because it was an outlet for me at that point.
Now, you ended up going to UF, and your son, Titus, is also going to play for UF. What does that mean to you?
It means a lot. My son and my nephew, they both have, since they were, I would say, 6 months, been in Gator gear. That's all they ever talked about as kids, is one day I'm going to play on this field, and then going to the stadium and going to games with me and their uncle, his uncle, Ernest Graham, who also played at Florida. It's definitely a special time for our family as a whole. But again, as I told him, you know, at the end of the day, you got to go up here and make your mark, and both academically and athletically, because I've already graduated and I've already played on that field, and I'll never play there again. I'll never go back to school there. So it's your moment, your opportunity. Your and you know, people ask me all the time, well, because I have another son at UCF, mm-hmm. and he was like, well, you didn't try to get him to go to Florida. It's not, I didn't try to get him to go anywhere. It's their decision. I'm not waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning or 6 o'clock in the morning having to train. I'm not being yelled at by the coaches. I'm not taking one class. I'm not trying to navigate through campus or figure out what I'm going to eat on campus. That's his decision. He's got to go where he's comfortable doing all of that at. Because mm-hmm. for the next 4 years, maybe five, that's his commitment to himself. That's his first adult decision. And I never wanted to sway it in any way, shape, or form. Of course, deep down inside, I would have loved for both of them to be there. But I'm happy that they both get a quality education. They both get to play in great programs.
You're listening to Florida Matters. We're talking with Thaddeus Bullard, a.k.a. WWE star Titus O'Neil, the recipient of this year's Kente Community Award. When we come back, we'll talk more about his upbringing and charity work. Welcome back to Florida Matters. I'm Matthew Petty. Let's get back to the conversation with this year's University of South Florida Kente Community Award winner Thaddeus Bullard, or as pro wrestling fans know him, Titus O'Neil. You don't pull any punches in your book, No Such Thing as a Bad Kid, when you talk about your upbringing, including what happened to your mother, who was raped when she was 11. So what was it like for you as a kid growing up in South Florida and kind of learning about your origin story?
Well, I didn't learn about my origin story until I was 17 at the Boys Ranch. I left my mom's house at 12 years old. I went to the Florida Sheriff's Boys Ranch at 12 years old and was supposed to stay there for 18 months and subsequently end up staying for 5 years, not because I was bad the entire time, because I actually was getting ready to get kicked off mm-hmm. of the Boys Ranch and being sent back home. But Patrick Minogue, who I'll forever love and be indebted to, said the most powerful things to me at 12 years old that I ever heard, you know, while I was getting ready to get kicked off. He said that there's no such thing as a bad kid, which at the time I was explaining to him that I've been told I'll be dead in jail by the time I was 16. I grew up poor. I don't have a lot of any resources for anything. I'll never graduate from high school, which at the time, nobody in my family graduated from high school. My mom worked two jobs to make ends meet that never met to support me and my younger brothers. And having a person tell me that they love me and that they believed in me and they truly showed that was really the catalyst to help me start making sure that I believed in myself. And mm-hmm. I think that there are a lot of people, especially kids, which is why I'm such a huge advocate for kids, especially those that are around that 11, 12, 13-year-old, that middle school age, because they, too, are told, I love you, I care for you, I believe in you, etc., and then next thing you know, they are moved to another school, or they got a different stepfather, or they don't have a father at all, or they got to find housing somewhere else, so there's no stability in life for them to show that they are loved and to show that they are, you know, that people believe in them. Mm-hmm. And so, and as soon as they get that glimmer of hope, whether it be through a teacher or a coach, you know, that teacher gets worn out, they end up leaving the school, and so now it's just this recurring cycle of, you know, trauma that is caused by someone. I mean, it's crazy that someone can love you so much that they can cause trauma. And the trauma is because of the distance and the disconnect. It's not because of how that person treated you. It's just now where am I going to get this from? So then they end up turning to the streets and turning to drugs and turning to alcohol because the home situation is not set up and designed for them to be successful. The school situation is not set up and designed for them to be successful. And so for me, having lived that, seen that, understand that, and then be, you know, essentially not removed from that, but moved from that, because I'm never going to be removed from it. If you look at most of the work that I do, I'm right in the middle of the worst situations. Mm-hmm. Because it's part of who I am. And I see people raising millions of dollars around the globe for various causes that they have zero connection to. They don't understand it. They have a heart for it, but they're not engaged with it. And I'm not going to put my time, my talents, and my resources in something that I'm not engaged in. Mm-hmm. Because even if I have never dealt with a family member losing their life or a kid losing his life to cancer, I can definitely relate and understand as a father, I don't want to leave this earth before my child, any of them. And if I can help this child and this family by putting a smile on their face in any way, shape, or form, I'm going to do that because somebody did it for me when they had nothing to gain in return.
One of the other things that you focus on with your philanthropy is you have the Thaddeus M. Ballard Academy at Sly Middle Magnet School. So are you trying to impart some of those values as part of that academy, some of the kind of things you've been talking about?
Yeah, I'm trying to. With the academy, it's really, you know, so there are so many kids out there that don't play sports. They don't. They're kind of the oddball kind of kids in some people's eyes. And those are the kids I want to say, hey, let's wrap our arms around these kids because they are creative. They do want to start businesses. They do want to go to college. They do want to own homes. They want to, and they're also the ones that are going to move the whole culture for this school grade, you know, because they are the brainiacs. They're the ones that are going to apply themselves, et cetera. And place them in a situation where we have the best of the best in STEM and technology and robotics and video and production. You know, we have an LED volume screen at our school. We're the only school in the country, a middle school for sure, that has an LED volume screen.
Okay. So these kids have access to some of that, see
yes.
how it works?
Yeah, they have that. We have a mental health and wellness area at the school called the Zen Den. We just hired a full-time mental health and wellness specialist so we can start having a mental health and wellness club, et cetera, because it goes back to what I said in the book. There's no such thing as a bad kid. There are kids that are in bad situations, making bad decisions, and having bad outcomes. You put those same exact kids in a good environment around great people, they have a greater chance to succeed, and therefore they have a greater outcome. So all I'm doing is the exact same thing that was done for me. Taking these kids, put them in a good environment around good culture, around great people, and having given them a greater chance to succeed. With the Leadership Academy, with our magnet program, you know, with our traditional students, these kids all reside in the 33610 zip code, which is the sixth highest zip code for kids living in poverty in the state of Florida. If there is any kid that mirrors me as a kid, it's every last one of these kids at this school. So being able to help transform this school, not only for these demographic of kids at this school, but for this entire zip code, we built a prosperity center there. We have financial literacy. We have job placement. We have a partnership with Metropolitan Ministries where we help those that are facing homelessness and self-sufficiency. Feeding Tampa Bay, a Fresh Forest program where we hire, you know, adults and give them the opportunity to get educated in the world of culinary and then place them into culinary jobs. It's a holistic approach for me. It's not, so when we talk about education, it's easy to say, hey, you know, get your head up. Why is that kid sleeping? Well, he hadn't eaten, and he just watched his mom get domestically abused again. They didn't sleep well. His clothes are dirty. They just got eviction notice on their door. He slept in a car, or she slept in a car. All this trauma that's coming in, and you're sitting here wondering why they don't have a pencil or a pen and a piece of paper out and about. Well, let's first and foremost figure out where the kid is at. A lot of times people say, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? But very few times do people say, what happened to you? Because once you find out what happened to somebody, then you can find out how to fix those wrongs.
And just kind of back to what we were talking about earlier, like food is a big part of how you try and kind of pay it forward, right? Because you talk in your book about how food was a constant struggle for your mom to put food on the table. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how you now sort of relate to people in some ways.
Yeah, not just food, like good food, you know. We have community gardens. We have magic grows on our campus. We have hydroponic stations on our campus because I want to teach them how to pick and grow fresh vegetables and how to prepare them as well. I'm an investor in Next Level Brands. We have three restaurants here in town, Boulan, Forbici, and Union. I love great food. I've traveled all over the world. I see and taste all types of different things. I want people to understand that, like, food is also, it's a connector of people, too. And so if someone knows they're going to go over to somebody's house and it's like, hey, you know, Matt's having a barbecue at his house. Well, the word is probably already out. Matt don't do very good with barbecue. So the likelihood of him having a high attendance, you know, is not going to be that good. But if they say, hey, Matt's inviting us over to a nice restaurant, and they know Matt knows food, there's a pretty good chance there's going to be great conversation, drinks, food, et cetera, and then people are going to leave there happy. My whole thing is getting these kids an opportunity. I don't serve them anything that I would not eat. Mm-hmm. You know, when we eat, when I bring food in, the teachers as well, when they don't eat anything that I would not eat. And it's purposeful because, I got on my best friend a few years ago because we were doing this leadership conference with a bunch of high school athletes, and he had hot dogs and pizza. And they were from like a very low brand pizza place. And I pulled him to the side. I was like, hey, bro, what are you doing? And he was like, I had to go with what I had in the budget. And I was like, well, you should have came to me and talked to me about it. I say, because these are all Division I prospects. And some of them will have an opportunity to go on to the next level. And we need to teach them that if they're going to give at the highest level, because the people that they're nine times out of 10 going to be given to are accustomed to just getting, they can eat, you know, sorry if they're one of your sponsors, but they can eat Little Caesars anywhere, but they can't eat Papa John's, which is, you know, different. Or they can't eat this, like, so you just got to give them something that they would not normally ever get, because they'll never forget that. You know, when I take kids to games, like, we don't put them on a school bus. We put them on either charter bus, or I put them in a private limo service. And putting them on a plane, you know, the first time I put kids on a plane was on a private plane. Mm-hmm. Now they're scarred for life. They don't know anything about TSA. they got driven right up to the tarmac, got on the plane and got off. But it's like giving them that experience at a very young age.
Something to aspire to.
Right. So that they can say, one day I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. And when I do it, I'm going to do it like this.
What do you barbecue?
I barbecue everything. I just did some beef ribs over the weekend and some chicken thighs. I'm a pretty good cook, man.
We've been speaking with Thaddeus Bullard, or as WWE fans know him, Titus O'Neil. He's one of the recipients of this year's Kente Awards from the University of South Florida. Thaddeus, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
That's our show for this week. Our executive producer is Grayson Doctor. Blake Bass engineered this episode. Subscribe to the Florida Matters podcast wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.